Welcome to the Dildork, dorky discourse on sex, dating, and masturbating. My name is Kate Sloan. I'm a sex journalist, a sex blogger, and I'm really bad at being broken up with. Who are you, friend?
I'm Bex. I'm a sex educator and a sex blogger, and I think I'm worse at breaking up with people, honestly.
To be fair, I do think it is the harder thing of the two to do.
Yeah.
In part, I think, because there's higher expectations. Like, people, when you get dumped, are just like, you know what, grieve how you need to, like, do whatever you need to do, basically, as long as you're not, you know, like, stalking the person or whatever. But when it comes to breaking up with someone, people are very stringent about, like, what the do's and don'ts are. So there's a lot of pressure.
Well, and, like, when you're pretty conflict avoidant... Mm-hmm. You can avoid breaking up with people. You can't avoid being broken up with. I mean, I guess you can run out of the room, but eventually you're going to have to face that situation.
Yeah. And then they still might even text you if you run out of the room. So it's not like you can fully avoid it.
Yeah, exactly. Just like run and yell nope for the rest of your life.
You're still together if you do that, right? That's how that works.
Technically, they never finish the sentence. but no, with, like, breaking up with someone is, like, an active decision that you have to make.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a lot harder, and you have to, like, start that conversation. It's a whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So, we've wanted to do an episode about breakups for, like, a very long time, but... we have both gone through breakups over the course of this show, so we would go through periods where we were like, nope, I can't talk about that. Not like, in a too good many place feelings for that.
And also far too much risk of sounding like I'm being shady and subtweeting people.
Yes. Like... yeah. But I feel like we're in an okay space now for it. I feel okay about it. How are you feeling?
Yeah, no, I'm feeling great.
Okay.
I'm good. Right. You suggested it today, and I was like, oh, finally, a day when I feel fully comfortable and actually kind of excited about having that conversation.
Yeah, same. I had that moment today, too, and I was like, why am I excited to talk about breakups? I don't understand how brains work, but...
I know. You sent me the questions, and I was like, oh, I have so many opinions about all of this.
Yes. Yeah. So... looking at the list of questions, including listener questions we received, this might be a two-parter. That would be my guess, because it turns out people have a lot of feelings about breakups. Who would have thought?
Wild.
Yeah. So here's a first question to kick us off. Do you remember your first breakup? Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah. It was, like, a, like, middle school relationship thing mm-hmm. where Sky asked me out in front of, like, half the class. We went on, like, a single date to a movie. It was that movie about kids, I think, stealing test answers. And I probably just described, like, 16 movies.
Yeah, I don't know the one you're talking about.
But it was some,
like, a great heist.
Cheesy teenage heist movie, yeah. And then, like, talked occasionally and nothing else. And I'm an asshole, or, well, no, I probably still am an asshole for other reasons. But at the time I was an asshole and, wrote a note that was basically like, you're not actually acting like my boyfriend, so, like, we're not, so, like, I think we should break up. And, like.
Which, honestly, is quite a sophisticated sentiment.
I was like, you should hug me more.
Like, I have trouble in my adult relationships realizing when people aren't acting like a good enough partner for me or acting like a partner for me at all. And like, I'll make excuses and stuff. So the fact that you were able to like even hold that opinion is pretty impressive.
Yeah. And then like a couple of years later, like long enough that it wasn't super weird, but this kid showed up at the martial arts school where I used to teach, and I, like, taught him martial arts for years, and we were, like, buddies. It's a weird time.
That's cool. Yeah, we're gonna talk about staying friends with exes a little bit later, because that is a loaded subject.
Yeah.
What do you think that that experience taught you about breakups, if anything, about like how they should or should not occur?
I don't know. I think I even knew at the time that that was like kind of a coward's way out.
Mm.
And I think it's made me not want to do that again. Like, yeah. I've, throughout my progression of breakups, I've gotten better at, like, addressing shit more directly.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time. Which is...
Yeah.
Adulthood.
I like to think I have as well, but also, like, even within the past 2 years, I did break up with someone via text because I was that scared. And it was a very short-term relationship, which I think is not necessarily an excuse, but sort of an explanation of where I was at, because I think, like, a longer-term relationship, to me, pretty obviously deserves, you know, more of a conversation and in person and all of that, but...
Yeah.
I don't know. Sometimes you're just so scared that it's like you have to choose, you have to basically like do harm reduction with yourself and choose like the thing that is going to cause the least damage to yourself and to the other person, ideally. And sometimes that might be texting, and that sucks. But like sometimes, I don't know. I don't think it's entirely unjustifiable.
Yeah. I mean, I think for most people, it's not ideal. Mm-hmm. But I think communication styles vary wildly in relationships.
Yeah.
I always think about my friend who fights with his partner via text in the mm-hmm. same house, just because they communicate better that way.
Yeah. Such a remarkable anecdote, yeah.
Yeah. So, like, if it works for both of you, I'm never going to tell you it's, like... the wrong communication style. And like, to be honest, breakups rarely work for both people.
Right. So. Like, I think a lot of times when people get mad about the medium of a breakup, it's just sort of like they've found something to latch onto that feels like a legitimate thing to be angry about when they're actually angry and hurt about the breakup itself.
Yeah.
Which is not to discount, like, obviously there are tons of situations where an in-person breakup would be the more compassionate thing to do. I believe that generally it is. But I also think when people say, like, you should never break up via text, that is kind of, I mean, I don't want to be super SJW and say that it's ableist, but it's kind of ableist. Like, you know, like, yeah. It kind of just ignores people who have anxiety, people who maybe have trauma about confrontation. Like, there's so many reasons you might be uncomfortable with an in-person breakup.
Yeah, and... That, I mean, we're not even addressing the number of relationships that exist primarily via text.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, there are a lot of people who long-distance relationships and video isn't accessible for any number of reasons, whether it's, you know, degrees of internet access, degrees of familiarity, ability, all kinds mm-hmm. of reasons. And that, like, if that's the... context in which your relationship takes place, it makes sense that that's also the context in which the end of it would take place. Yeah. So there are definitely situations in which maybe it is the most compassionate thing. Maybe you know your partner processes difficult conversations better when they have a moment to think about what they're going to say. Maybe they're not super comfortable being vulnerable in front of people, and you think this is going to be a really vulnerable conversation, mm-hmm. and the more compassionate thing is to allow them to self-care alone. Like,
yeah.
I think it makes more sense to think about the people in the relationship than follow any, like, blanket rule, even if it sounds like it makes sense on the surface. And that is my entire platform on sex education, so just go ahead and apply that everywhere else. It yeah. probably works.
Well, the long distance thing is interesting too, because there are some people who say very seriously that they don't think you should ever break up with someone not in person, and that includes in long distance relationships, so you should wait until the next visit to break up with them, because it's just the respectful and mature thing to do. And I think, like, I understand that perspective, but at the same time, traveling is very expensive. And, like, how bad would it suck to be so excited for this trip, to spend a bunch of money on it, and then get there and be dumped, and then, like, maybe have nowhere to go after that, like, nowhere to stay, and be, like, crushed and also, like, out a bunch of money. It just, I don't know. I think that doesn't really check out for me as, like, a viable reason to make someone do that.
And, like, I think we're talking varying degrees of long-distance relationships, right? Like, do you see each other every weekend, every other weekend? Is it, you know, an easy, you know, are we talking 2 hours of distance, or are we talking 7 hours on a plane of distance? Are we talking countries, you know? And that kind of travel just isn't practical. And then you have to think about stuff like, well, do you want them to break up with you at the beginning of the trip? And then you have to figure out the trip, like you were talking about, or at the end, and then
which is almost worse, I think, because you'll know the entire time that things are not right.
Yeah,
and it's just going to be uncomfortable. And when you do get broken up with, you'll be like, why didn't you tell me? Like, this entire trip was a lie. It's just not good.
Yeah, it's just there's no context in which, like, travel in the long distance relationship I ended, in which traveling to see him would have been a better call than just, like, getting on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's where our relationship mostly took place.
Yes, makes sense. That was a huge long tangent. I do want to rewind and tell you about my first breakup, because it was like pretty classic high school drama. I was dating this girl when I was 15. And I think we had been dating for about 5 weeks at this point. She was my first girlfriend, my first person I'd ever dated. And it was exam time at school. And I was waiting for her after one of her exams. And she kind of, like, walked by and, like, gave me the, like, just 1 minute gesture. Because we had had plans to, like, go get coffee or something after this exam. So I was like, okay, I guess she has to, like, go get stuff from her locker or something. And I waited there, and I waited there for over an hour.
Oh.
And she never came back. And so I went home and cried and was really, really angry. And I was thinking, like, if she doesn't get back to me within 24 hours with, like, a really legitimate excuse for why she stood me up, like, I think that I have to end this relationship. Like, I don't know that I would do that now, but I was, like, very angry. And she called me, I think later that night, and told me that she had basically, like, panicked about dating me and, like, had some commitment phobia, which is hilarious for a 15-year-old, but that was the type of people we were. And she basically was like, I can't have a girlfriend right now, I'm sorry. And we broke up, and it was, like, very, very devastating to me. But, like, the thing that was more devastating, actually, was that, like, for over a year afterward, she, like, still clearly was into me and would get, like, really jealous when I would date other people and would like, say things to the effect of, like, maybe one day we'll get back together. And it was just, like, she was just trying to keep me on the hook. Like, it really wasn't very nice.
That's such baby queer bullshit.
I know, and, like, we've, like, to, like, some extent made up, but, yikes.
Yeah. It's like, teenage bullshit, but I feel like it's also every queer's coming out bullshit, no matter the age. You get to live your teenage bullshit all over again.
Yep, it's true. So you mentioned that you're not very good at breaking up with people, but you have done it. I'm curious your take. How do you know when it is time to break up with someone?
Fuck.
I mean, it's really dependent on the situation, of course. But I think broadly there are some things that you can look for or pay attention to.
Yeah. Yeah. When being around them feels like socializing again, and I get that same feeling of dread that I get about going into public.
Yeah.
When they are no longer, like, an introvert recharge spot.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty solid sign.
I will say for me, that one's a little bit dicey, because, like, depending on what kind of mental health week I'm having, there are definitely times when I just don't feel like seeing a partner. But if that's, like, a consistent thing...
Yeah.
Increasingly, then I agree with you. That's a red flag for me as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Not like once, but right. I'm also a person who I have, like, a couple of people that just, like, my brain just, in the most loving way possible, does not register as people.
Yeah.
You can just, because I've realized I'm able to be outside in the world with people or in my own brain, and I cannot do both. Mm-hmm. And being outside is really exhausting because I need to, like, check in with myself and figure out what the fuck's going on with me.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, people that I can be in my own brain with and not stress about that.
Yeah.
If they stop feeling that way to me.
Mm-hmm.
Then that's a sign that they're not someone that I want to feel, like, super close to.
Mm-hmm.
Another
one for me is if I find myself making excuses for them or for the relationship a lot. Mm. Like, no, like, they're really a good person. They just, like, said or did a bunch of shitty things. Like, you know, especially yeah. when I'm, like, talking to my friends about them, if I find myself, like, really trying to justify why everything's actually fine, then that's definitely not a good sign.
I see, I kind of do the opposite. I find myself venting about them a lot. Almost falling into that, like, the way straights talk about each other, which I'll never understand.
Mm-hmm.
But where husbands and wives are against each other. in a battle of the sexes.
Yeah.
But I find myself falling into that kind of, like, petty bickering place, mm-hmm. where I'll, like, make offhanded comments about them to, like, my friends, or, like, I'll be like, I have a date later. and it's not, I'm not feeling joyful about, like, my experiences with them, and I'm not sharing excited things about my time with them mm-hmm. with the people important to me.
Yeah, I'll find myself also, like, very checked out of the relationship in terms of, like, if I'm thinking about future plans, maybe I'll, like, totally forget to visualize them as part of those plans, or I'll kind of have weird moments throughout the day where I'm like, oh, yeah, I have a partner. Like, I'm kind of, they're kind of just, like, not at the front of my brain anymore in the same way, like, if I've started to lose interest in them in a way that suggests I should break up with them.
Yeah, if they're not kind of, like, integrated into your life mm-hmm. in that way anymore.
Yeah.
What do you think about, we talked about this with Liz last week, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But what do you think about the concept of deciding between breaking up with someone and downgrading a relationship? Like, how do you know
yeah.
how to make that call?
That's tough. I mean, like, I think you can usually feel when there is something about someone that you want to keep in your life to some degree. And, like, a lot of mm-hmm. times, including in monogamous culture even, the thing that you want to keep in your life is the friendship piece. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times people try to do that to varying degrees of success. But, you know, I've had situations in the past where I really liked maybe the romantic aspect and not the sex aspect, or maybe the sex aspect and not the romantic aspect. So you need to, like, figure out, like, is there some part of this that you would like to salvage? And then you have to have the conversation where you try to figure out if they are on the same page about that, which requires a lot of, like, tact and sensitivity, because you could really hurt someone if they're, like, super in love with you and you're like, actually, I just want to fuck you from now on. yeah. I know this happened to me. I did this to someone and I did not realize that he was, like, in love with me, and it created this, like, very resentful rift in our relationship, and we ended up breaking up horribly, and it was bad.
Yeah, I think it's also useful to kind of consider what does that ideal relationship with them look like, and it might be, you know, alternating between, like, a sexual or a romantic relationship, or it might just be this but less often.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there are people that are delightful in shorter doses. Like, maybe we don't have weekend sleepovers anymore, you know, or maybe I see you once a week, not every night.
Yeah.
And being able to communicate that can be really helpful, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if you want resources about that, I would suggest Liz's book, Building Open Relationships, which has an entire section on up-leveling and down-leveling and how to go about that, because it is very tricky, especially since we're raised in a culture that, like, really doesn't teach us that that's an option.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the actual breakup conversation. I know that you and me have in common that we both are way too over-analytical and anxious about this conversation, to the point of, like, you know, scripting it, practicing it with friends beforehand, stuff like that.
It's possible.
So what do you think is important to say while you're breaking up with someone?
That you're breaking up with them. Let's just start there.
Very clearly. Do not leave room for ambiguity.
Yeah. Jesus. I think also, like, what that means to you. You know, is this, I don't want to see you anymore ever again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I casually texted someone and was like, I'm really not interested in seeing you anymore, or whatever, like, kind of passively, whatever. And he was like, great, but can I still invite you to things? And I was like, I mean, I'll say no, but sure, I guess. Like, I was like, I don't,
Yeah. Well, that one is actually a little bit tricky because of the way that our culture uses seeing someone as a euphemism for dating them.
Yeah.
So I do think you actually have to be a little bit, like,
extra. Yeah, oh no, I was that. I was super, like, ambiguous about it.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I think that's helpful, but you want to talk about kind of the context for what you expect for your relationship moving forward. Like, what does this mean that I'm breaking up with you? And not just in the distant future, like, also in the immediate future. Like, do I want to talk to you tomorrow? Mm-hmm. 'Cause we can maybe be friends, but maybe you need, like, a week or so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when, who is going to initiate that contact? That was a really helpful thing I negotiated in my most recent breakup. I was like, hey, listen, I started this conversation, so you start the next one. Because that next one is gonna be almost as weird.
Yeah.
So, like, I traded the anxiety-provoking conversations. And I was also like, listen, like, I've dropped a lot of feelings on you. I've been having them before I had this conversation, so now it's your turn. You let me know when you're done having them, and we can have the next conversation. But yeah, I think setting expectations moving forward is something that's really important, and I think a lot of people kind of fall back on just doing a laundry list on how we got here and not really talking about what the next steps are, which I find more helpful, honestly.
Well, so what do you think about listing the reasons, or maybe not listing, but, like, at least mentioning the reasons that you are breaking up with someone while you are doing it? Because, like, people have very differing opinions on this, because some people think it's, like, unnecessarily cruel, which I think certainly depending on what the reasons are, it can be. Yeah. And the other issue that I have with this is sometimes if you tell the person the reasons, they will try to argue with you
using logic.
As if somehow they can talk you out of this thing, which, like, makes me not want to really go into it too much. But at the same time, I know that when I have been broken up with without a real reason given to me, it is, like, torturous. Like, I have no idea what I did wrong. I have no idea if I'm going to continue to do it in my future relationships. It's really hard for me. So, like, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I have a lot of mixed feelings similar to you. I think it really depends on what the reason is and how long you've been in that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly. 'Cause I think there is in my experience, I find there's a more cultural leaning towards it's rude not to say something about, like, why. To just be like, I don't, not anymore, goodbye.
I mean, unless it's so obvious to the both of you.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when I broke up with the dude who was not a feminist, I think I basically said to him, like, we're too different. And I didn't explain what I meant by that because he fucking knew. He knew exactly what I meant by that.
Yeah. Exactly. And I think there are times when that's just where your relationship is going, and you can both tell that.
Yeah.
But I think the issue with that cultural expectation around, like, there needs to be a reason, doesn't create space for the fact that sometimes the reason is just, I'm just not excited about this in the way I want to be about my relationships.
Yeah.
And it doesn't create space for those kind of breakups. And honestly, if someone's feeling that way, I would rather they break up with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there should be more, like, space and communication for the breakups that are just, like, meh.
Yeah.
Like, this just... I want to be with people that are excited about me. Like,
yes.
That's a big part of why I'm polyamorous, honestly.
It's important to note, I mean, you're kind of saying it, but you can break up with someone for any reason at any time. Like, relationships, like sex, have to involve ongoing consent if they're done ethically and right. The thing is, like, in saying that, I also want to acknowledge that, like, just because that's true doesn't mean there aren't, like, cruel ways to break up with someone. Like, you can be, like, ethically in the right on your end and also be doing it in a bad way. So it's not like you just get to, like, peace out and, like, leave with no regard for the other person. Like, sure, yeah, technically you can. Nobody's really gonna stop you. But, like, if you are trying to be a good human in the world, it's just, like, not a nice thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah, and I just... It's really hard to kind of give... I don't know, a blanket rule around what the answers are. Because this is really murky, and it's really hard to sometimes be a good as good a person as you want to be.
Yeah. I think with regards to reasons, I have tended to prefer it generally when people do give me a reason. Like, as much as that can be painful, it is, to me, preferable than just running an anxiety loop in my mind forever about what did I do wrong? I'll never know. And, like, a lot of the times when people gave me the reason that they were breaking up with me, I really didn't understand or accept it right off the bat because, like, they had been processing this for longer than I had, right? So, like, they had been thinking it through and coming up with these words for this thing, and I hadn't had time to do that. Like, one of my most devastating breakups, the person told me, I just feel like, outside of our sex life and our intellectual connection, we don't have anything in common. Which, at the time, I was like, literally, what else is a relationship besides those two things? Like, I don't understand. But, like, having spent some time away from him, I did eventually understand what he meant, which is, like, a lot of our, like, life goals and interests and hobbies and even values, like, don't necessarily line up. And I think that's what he was talking about. But at the time, I was just like, what the fuck does that mean?
Yeah.
Like, it sucks when people give you a reason that sounds like a fake reason. Like, I would rather they just give no reason if you feel like you have to make up some fake thing. Like, it's not you, it's me. Like, just don't bother.
Well, and I think what's really interesting in that story is that person, like, might have gone through the work and been like, oh, those are the words. Oh, that's what this, you know, mystery feeling is.
Mm-hmm.
And it just didn't resonate. And it just didn't, until, like, months later, like, you just weren't ready to hear that. You know what I mean? Or they could have pulled words out of their ass. But I think it just represents that for some people, like, you can do the work and sometimes it still won't work. And sometimes breakups will still be shitty.
Yeah, I mean, also I think that there's a thing the human mind does where, like, if you are just having that gut sense that this isn't working and I want out, sometimes your brain tries to, like, invent a logical explanation for why that is.
Yeah.
As a rationalization. And sometimes it sounds very, like, legit, but when you actually start to pick it apart, it isn't the real reason mm-hmm. for breaking up. Like, because I think very often the real reason is you're just not feeling it anymore. And that's a really, really hard thing to put into words, especially because yeah. it can sound really mean, even though yeah. it's a totally normal thing that happens all the time.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm just not really into you is coded as, like, so harsh, but it,
yeah,
it should, like, I don't know, I just wish there was more cultural acceptance as, like, that is a perfectly valid way to opt out of a relationship, and honestly a good reason to initiate a breakup.
Yeah, I've in the past sometimes said this just isn't working for me anymore, which is okay, unless you get one of those people who's gonna try to fucking argue with you.
Yeah.
The one time that this really The one time that this really happened to me where someone was actually arguing with me while I was breaking up with him, we were talking on the phone, and I was actually really grateful that I had decided to have this conversation over the phone, because he got extremely angry to the point that I kind of felt like if we had been physically together, he might have harmed me in some way. I don't know, but, like, that was kind of the vibe I got. Like, I was really freaked out, and I was really glad that I could just, like, hang up the phone, block his number until he cooled down, because, like, he was really scaring me. So that's, like, another situation where you might not want to break up in person.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I think that brings up an important point that for some people, breakups do involve a safety plan, which might involve friends or an exit strategy or breakups in a public place, because people, particularly men, are often terrifying.
Public place versus private place is actually a huge debate if you start looking into sort of like the breakup advice blog posts and stuff, because there are merits for both, and I think it does exist on, like, a gendered spectrum to some extent, because, like, there is the association with cis men that they might become violent, which is, like, not, like, that's definitely a real risk. But with anyone, but, like, I think statistically, particularly with cis men. But I've also heard it said that you should only break up in a private place, because it's very embarrassing to, for example, burst into tears at a fancy restaurant, especially if you, like, plan to go back to that restaurant. And also, like, you don't want the person making a scene. I don't know. I've, like, chosen different locations based on just kind of, like, what felt right for the relationship. I don't think that there was one right answer there.
Yeah, I agree. I do think in many places it can be great to find that perfect place in between public and private, like that corner in a, you know, moderately loud bar, you know what I mean? Like, place where you can have a conversation and still hear each other, but also know that most of the other people don't hear you.
Right. And you could cry and probably nobody would say anything.
Exactly. You know, spaces that give you a little bit of privacy, but still that degree of safety. If something gets loud or intense, there are other people who would then notice. And I think it's helpful to point out, like, we've said a lot of shit about people who are bad at receiving breakups. But these are all also, I mean, breakups are extremely emotional, and for the person receiving it can sometimes be surprising, and they don't have the time to calibrate, and our society doesn't teach you coping skills around that or emotional intelligence. Like, that's just not a priority for our society. So the people that think they can argue their way out of it are still probably processing. Like, breakups are a grief process, and bargaining is one of the stages of grief. That doesn't, you know, you can talk to them later and they'll probably tell you, no, I don't want to coerce someone into a relationship, or at least some of them would. But that's just what their brain grabs for. Men who explode are doing it because they're having some really intense feelings, and society has taught them that the only intense feeling they're allowed to have is anger. And the only way they're allowed to express it is violence. So it's shitty, it's dangerous, it puts all of us in danger, but also society is broken. Let's work on fixing it.
Yeah. When that guy broke up with me and he told me that we only had our intellectual connection and sex life in common, he said to me after that, do you think that's true? Or, like, what do you think about that? Which I still kind of think is weird. Like, it still feels like he was just, like, it was just this empty gesture where, like, he had already decided, but he wanted to feel woke. And, like, he was, like, giving me input into it. But that gave me the sense that, like, I was suddenly being called upon to make a statement about why he shouldn't break up with me. It was, like, a very weird thing that I've never had happen.
It's like some breakup. Fucking exit interview bullshit.
Yeah, like, I hated it.
I wouldn't honestly. I think one of the only questions you should ask of someone that you're breaking up with is, like, do you want any support from me right now, and what does that look like?
Right. And even that, like, I feel like that is more of a gesture than an actual concrete thing in the moment, because, like you said, they are kind of in shock. They're kind of grieving. Like, they probably don't know at that moment what they want from you. They need to sort out their feelings. But I think it's nice to, at the very least, say, if this is true, I'll be around if you want to talk.
But only if it's true.
Yeah, please, please. So that same ex of mine said that to me, and again, the sense I got from him was that it was performative. Like, I really don't feel like if I had texted him wanting to talk about it more that he would have been receptive to that. And I didn't want to do that either. Like, I was, like, humiliated. I felt rejected, you know. I didn't want to process it with him, but at the same time, like, I kind of needed to. I kind of wish that I had in some ways, because, like, that was a very, very long grieving process. But the post-breakup conversations are really hard to navigate. Like, because, like, this person is saying basically, like, I never want to see you again, but also, like, if you want to talk about it, like, I don't know. It's very mixed messages.
Yeah, I think for me, it's most helpful to, like, have that conversation and then, like, very clearly say what the next step is. Whether it's, you know, when you feel ready, you text me, or in a few days, let's talk, you know, let's check in and see if we want to talk about this. Like, I mean, I'm a kinkster. I believe in aftercare. If you are in a position where you are able to provide that for your partner after an experience you have had together, I think you have some moral responsibility to do that. And again, if you are in a position where you are able to do that without significant harm to yourself, whatever that looks like for you, you make that judgment call. But I think you have some moral obligation to do that if you're able to. And I think setting a time for you to readdress it that gives them, you know, if you've been dating this person for a while, you probably know how they process things. That gives them time to go through that process and come back out to you with any other thoughts they have. Because you're right, that's a super emotional experience, and you're gonna have new feelings later. Like, we've all had difficult conversations, and we've all been standing on the subway 4 hours later and been like, fuck, that was the thing to say!
Yeah.
God, I had the best burn, and I didn't use it. Like, so you want to give them a moment to go through all of those thoughts and come to those whatever conclusions they want to have, and have that kind of post-debrief type conversation, if you can, where you're both coming to the table prepared instead of only one of you.
Yeah. It's really tricky because, like, as much as I sometimes wish I could have had a post-breakup conversation with certain people, I also kind of think that those conversations wouldn't have been terribly productive for me, because I know myself and I know that I would cry and say things I would regret. Like, I just know that, because, like, when I'm grieving, I am not rational. I think that's true for many or most people. And so, like, I need a certain amount of time to write angry, irrational things in my journal and vent to my friends and all of this shit. And for me, it's really hard to know when I've gotten to a point where I can, like, safely and kindly talk to that person again. Like, I don't really know when all of that screaming and crying is done, you know, like, because it comes in waves, I think.
Yeah, and I think that's the difference between knowing yourself, you know what I mean? And that, I think we both know that about ourselves and are able to approach our breakups very differently than we have in the past.
Yes, it's a very interesting thing, because, like, much like falling in love, I feel like in some ways the more times that I've done it, the better I have gotten at it. But also, yeah, it is one of those things that kind of feels fresh and different and unique every single time that it happens. And so there is some part of me that doesn't get better at it and that might never get better at it. It's just like, I have done it, I've been broken up with enough times that I basically have my self-care routine, you know, in my head. So I know what I have to do and I know what is good for me to do at that time, but that doesn't mean that it's any less painful as I'm going through those steps, you know?
Yeah. See, for me, being broken up with is so much easier.
It fucking ruins me. It really, really fucks me up.
I know. I go through all of the questioning beforehand. That's the torture for me. That moment in limbo. I was in a relationship for 6 years. My first, like, real serious relationship. Should not have been in it more than, like, 2.5. But breakups are hard. So, you know, maybe just get engaged to him. It's fine. Yeah, like, for me, I can live in that place of indecision of just, like, and I am a fucking chronic optimist, so I will find that kernel of something of, like, but what about this part? This is delightful. Yeah. I will find joy in anything, which is usually a benefit to my personality, but not always. Because I can look on the bright side of things that I should not.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because I feel like what you're saying is that breaking up with someone is hard for you because of the uncertainty. And I actually feel like breaking up with people, for me, is easier because I am typically pretty certain about that decision, whereas having someone break up with me, there's a lot more uncertainty there for me in terms of, was this my fault? What could I have done differently? Should I have fought for them? There's, like, all these questions that I'm left with that I feel like are just open questions forever, for the most part.
Oh, see, and when so I'm broken
that's
up with?
That's part of what I struggle with it.
Yeah, that's so fascinating to me. Because when the decision is in my hands, I don't trust my decision-making that much, and I'm, like, constantly, like, but what if I make the wrong call? But what if I could have done something better? But what if I could have made this work? But what if I hurt them for no reason or deprive myself of something that once brought me joy?
Right.
And I get caught in that thought spiral and will analyze it forever. Meanwhile, when someone breaks up with me, I'm like, oh, okay, I just don't do this anymore. Great. And we'll, like, it's done. I don't, like, I know I'm not the kind of person that will ever want to talk someone else into being back with me. Like, I am confident that is not part of my process, and that is not something I've ever felt drawn to do. So when someone breaks up with me, I go, oh, I guess I just deal with these sad feelings that I have and move on, because I'm done now. And I don't, there's no indecision. I just feel sad for a little while and then keep doing things. And, like, that is so much more comfortable for me. Like, because I'm like, this, just deal with my shit and I'm going to feel like shit for a while and then it'll go away. I know that. I know that's what's going to happen. I can just make my way through it.
Yeah, I mean, I get parts of that. Like, I definitely think the breakups that were more decisive or, like, more necessary in a way that was visible to me are the ones that I got over more easily, which is part of why, like, when I was 15, like, that breakup was really, really hard for me, because this person was telling me for literally a year afterward that she, like, kind of still wanted to date me. So there was, like, this sense of, like, uncertainty and like, just, like, being on edge, being in limbo, which I fucking hate. It's just, like, not good for my anxiety. And so, like, I mean, yeah, we've been saying this a lot, that the idea of, like, clarity and decisiveness, like, it's very cruel in the moment, or it feels that way sometimes, but it is ultimately the kinder thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think that's so interesting that we both hate the same thing about breakups, but for us, it manifests in such entirely different ways.
Yeah, well, I was thinking about how, like, for me, breaking up with someone feels more like quitting a job, in the sense that, like, I'll have thought it through a lot. I'll have, like, talked it over with lots of people, and I'll know what I'm going to do next to some extent. Whereas when someone breaks up with me, it feels like a death. Like, it feels like this unexpected thing that came out of nowhere and that I can't do anything about, and that I just have to fucking be sad about, and that I had no agency in. And so I really do grieve it the way that I grieve a death. Like, even for shorter term relationships, like, I go through a grief process, and I've, like, looked at grief research to try to figure out what to do, because, like, sometimes you just really don't know what to do with all those feelings.
Yeah. I'm also, like, thinking back on my relationship history, and I think I know for a fact I have broken up with more people than I have been broken up with. I have not been broken up with very often. Mm-hmm. And I think you have more experience being broken up with?
I actually think I don't. I actually think okay. I have.
I thought that was something you had told me in the past.
No, well, it's one of those weird things where, like, your emotional reality is different from your real reality.
So true.
Because, like, I think of myself as someone who has been broken up with a lot. I think basically because those experiences have hurt me so deeply, and they feel like they're still so much a part of me and my, like, emotional landscape. But it's only because the people who I broke up with, I didn't really think about that much afterward comparatively, because, like, yeah. I had already processed those feelings by the time it happened, you know? So it just hit me differently.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think back, for me, I have to, like, struggle to think back to the people that, like, broke up with me. And for me, it's all of the people that I've had to break up with.
Mm-hmm.
So you talked a lot about how, like, you've looked up articles and stuff on getting through this grieving process. What are some of your favorite ways you've landed on, like, getting through the breakup process?
Yeah, I mean, well, first of all, it's important to say what people always fucking say, which is that time heals all wounds. And, like, the thing that sucks about it is that when you have just been broken up with, everybody fucking says this to you. And at the time, it doesn't really register. And it doesn't even feel helpful, like, because it feels like almost dismissive to me. Like people are like, well, like, don't worry about, like, your pain right now. It doesn't matter because it won't be around forever. And it's like, well, that actually is only true if I'm able to sit with and process the pain that I'm feeling right now. So it doesn't really serve anybody to, like, dismiss my current pain. Yeah. So I think, like, that is true. So that is important to acknowledge. Like, time is important. It does take time. I think for me, the most important things have been journaling and spending time with friends. Because I need to process my feelings. I need to, like, endlessly go over every obsessive thought I'm having about the whole situation, which I can do both in my journal and to my friends. And I also need that sense that, like, someone is still there for me, so that I don't feel like with my partner who I've lost, I've also lost all my human connection.
Yeah, definitely being around people and people who are comfortable letting me talk about this, and people mm-hmm. who I feel comfortable venting about this forever about,
mm-hmm.
Is, I think, very important. One thing on the, like, time heals all wounds thing, too, I think for me, something that I've noticed most distinctly around, some of my more recent breakups is that grief is really, like, an altered state. Like, it is a process that your brain is going through, and it clouds how you see everything for a little while. And there really is a moment when you sober up, basically.
Yes.
And it like, there is a distinct feeling, for me at least, to that time heals all wounds thing.
Mm-hmm.
Where just one day you poke it and it doesn't hurt anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there is definitely a very clear feeling of that for me.
Yes.
And in that time, it's just accessing things that I know bring me joy, whether they feel like they will in that moment or not.
Yeah.
being around people, continuing going through the motions of my life a little bit, not letting myself fall into, like, the puddle on the couch for too long. Maybe I'm in a pile of blankets for, you know, the weekend, and then I go do things.
Yes.
Because it's hard to get that motivation.
Yeah. What you said reminded me that I wanted to, I think I mentioned this earlier, but if you are going through a breakup that's, like, really, really hard, to the point that you, like I have sometimes done, are, like, honestly, like, what can I even do to make this feeling stop? Like, this is so horrible. I would really recommend looking at materials geared toward people who are grieving, like deaths of loved ones or whatever, because even though those are meant for a different thing, like, they are, on some elemental level, talking about something that is similar to what you're going through, and I have often found them very helpful, if just to remind me that, like, other people also go through pain. Like, and it can also be very, like, sobering and giving you a sense of perspective, because you're like, yeah, someone broke up with me. Like, my fucking, like, sister didn't die of cancer, though, you know? Like, it just gives you, like, a little bit of, like, space to realize that what happened to you sucks a lot, but it's not the end of the world, and also it gives you a framework for working through some of those feelings.
Yeah, because it is absolutely a similar emotional process.
Yes.
You know, to a different degree. I'm not going to say lesser, because totally depends on the person who broke up with you and the person who died.
I've been seeing a lot of, like, psychological journalism lately about how breakups actually can be traumatic, and I was looking, there was this article that came out about this, like, new technique for treating heartbreak that has also been used for people with trauma, and basically they give you beta blockers, which stop the stress hormones from flaring up in your body for a little bit, and then they make you write out the story of your breakup, like, over and over again, so that you sort of desensitize yourself to it while in a lower state of emotional agitation, and it just helps sort of, like, acclimatize you to the story so that it doesn't, like, emotionally affect you so much. And I found that really interesting, just because, like, clearly heartbreak and trauma have some overlapping elements, and I think it's really oftentimes validating to know that, because we think of heartbreak as, like, in some ways a lesser thing than many traumas that we go through, but it can be very traumatic sometimes.
Yeah, just, you know, it's just eat some Ben and Jerry's and you'll be fine, but, like...
Right, exactly.
Yeah, watch a couple rom-coms, but I think, so I've been reading stuff about attachment theory, and we're gonna do an episode on that soon. You don't all need to tweet me, I promise, we have someone. I've been reading about attachment theory, and part of what they talk about is how it was, this pair bonding system was developed because when, you know, we're living out in, like, before society, it's helpful to have another person near you so you can sleep and hunt and protect yourselves, right? We survive better in groups, in pairs. So it makes sense that when you have bonded with this person in a way that is, like, our connection is essential for our mutual survival. That's what the biology of your body is feeling, right?
Yeah.
This person's gonna help me make it through the world. They're gonna emotionally and physically support me. And then they go, actually, deuces. Like, your brain is gonna freak the fuck out, because your brain has decided this is the person who keeps you alive. So, yeah, it makes sense that you're going to have some intense feelings when you find out you're not going to see them anymore. Or you're going to see them in a totally different way than you thought.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Another thing I wanted to mention, you said earlier something about, like, lying in a puddle on the couch. And, like, a formula that I have found has worked well for me when I'm, like, in the early stages of, like, just been broken up with, like, totally acutely heartbroken and grieving. And this has actually worked for me even when I was, like, grieving an actual death. Finding some kind of balance between distraction and taking your mind off things and processing the feelings and sitting in the feelings. Mm-hmm. So the way that I usually would think about this is, like, if I am journaling about what happened, or if I'm having, like, a very intense, serious conversation with a friend about what happened, that is emotional work. That is very draining. It's very exhausting. Yeah. It's important. It's really important to do. But I think it's also important after you do that work to reward yourself in some way. And for me, sometimes that would be just like giving myself permission to mentally float away for the night. Like, I'm going to get really high and watch 6 episodes of Friends in a row, like, you know, just obliterate my brain. Yeah. And I think that you kind of need both of those things at certain points to move through the grief. But I think the mistake that a lot of people make is either doing too much of one or the other and not making space for the other one. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's just going to like run you into the ground or just be unhelpful.
Yeah. And touching on what you said about like just marathoning whatever show at that time. Mm-hmm. That's something I do a lot when I'm processing most of my intense feelings, honestly. But yeah. I find it actually really helpful to either rewatch something that I know I love, because, like, I can watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine a million times. It will mm-hmm. delight me every time. My favorite yes. jokes will come up. I'll know they're coming. I'll say them along with the show, alone in my room, and just be filled with joy. Uh-huh. We all have our comfort food. So, like, I will fall back on things like that, but sometimes I will also get into a new show and get really excited at that and, like, shift my energy that way. But a lot of times, the shows that resonate most with me at those times are the ones that I need the most at those times. And a lot of times, they allow me to process what's happening in my life through the lens of these characters, right? Mm-hmm. I look at the shows and I think about, what is, you know, the person trying to say? Like, what is the writer trying to say about this? Or how, you know, how are these experiences impacting the character development and those things? And the decisions I make often reflect a lot back on what is happening in my life and what's on my mind. Mm-hmm. It's like a Rorschach test. But it, also, have you, sorry, total side note, have you seen the viral tweet
that
about
Rorschach? Is hot?
That he's
yeah,
hot?
He's hot.
I know.
As fuck.
Oh my god. Anyway, I'm sorry.
I know, it's such a problem. I never knew. It's like when we all found out that who was the like socialist who everyone thought was hot? Was it young Lenin? I don't remember.
I think so.
Oh my yeah. god. What a week on social media that was.
I saw a tweet recently that was like, the new Rorschach test is just looking at pictures of Rorschach to find out if you're into men.
I actually feel like he's so transcendently hot that you wouldn't necessarily have to be normally into men to like him, but maybe
the new image for this episode is now Rorschach.
I wonder what he would have to say about, I was going to say vibrators, but what I meant to say was breakups. I don't know what's wrong with my brain.
We are a show about vibrators. That's fine.
Yeah. But it's funny what you said about yeah. like picking shows intentionally, like with regards to emotional content, because literally during my last breakup, I just watched Friends all the time mm-hmm. because Friends is like, to me, so mind-numbingly stupid that like I didn't need to do any mental work while watching that show. Like, I really wasn't thinking on the level that you're describing at all.
Well, I do, so I have varying degrees, right? Like, when I'm watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine, it is, like, completely, like, vegging out, whatever. But I will, like, I'll watch other things, and it'll give me a way to engage with those feelings, because I can't just sit and journal. Mm-hmm. I can't have that degree of focus. Mm-hmm. I was diagnosed with ADHD this morning.
Congratulations.
Thanks. They're giving me meds. I'm excited. Anyway, I don't have, I'm not able to just sit, and I'm, like, real bad at feelings. Like, it's not my strong suit. You may have noticed if you listen to this show. So I have a hard time really sitting with those feelings and, like, journaling in the way you talk about, or how you can just sit and cry. Like, that is not a thing I can do. I have never once in my life done that.
Well, since, like, to be toddlerhood. Fair. I do occasionally just sit and have a cry, But I think that the more normal thing for most people from talking to folks about this is to put on something that will make you cry. And yeah. I have found that actually more helpful. So, like, putting on music, like, emo music that I can scream along to, or putting on, like, A Walk to Remember, or, you know, something yeah. to, like, bring the tears up. Because, like, even if you're not directly crying about what happened to you, I still think that the crying itself is beneficial, like, physiologically.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I have, like... I mean, I don't have a ton of, that's a lie. I was gonna say I don't have a ton of sad shit in my arsenal. I just watch a lot of sci-fi, but there is a lot of sad sci-fi.
Yeah, it's true.
Sci-fi gives me sci-fi and horror give me every fucking feeling. Oh my God. but yeah, so for me, it is a way that I can engage with the feelings in a little bit more of a distant way, in a way that feels a little bit more comfortable for me, through this lens of storytelling. And it keeps me thinking about that because I'm also engaging with this other story.
Yes.
So it is something keeping my mind engaged and thinking and exploring the world. And I'm able to kind of take a step back from my feelings and see, like, what's happening to, like, Jake Peralta right now, and then step back into, yeah. like, but also, Jake Peralta is a metaphor for my breakups. Like, I don't right. know
and
how. Right,
and then if you want to really fall down the rabbit hole, you go and look up fanfics about Jake Peralta being broken up with, and then you just go whole hog on it, you know?
Yes.
Great.
Yes.
Thank you so much for joining us for this a little bit heavy episode of the Dildorks. We had so many listener questions on this that we didn't get to the listener questions. There was
Did
too
we
much
get
to
through
say.
Our questions?
No, we didn't Your even questions. Finish our questions.
Yeah. Great.
So next
this
week
is what our
is
new show
be,
is about.
Yes. Just an entire show about breakups.
Welcome to the Dildorks. We talk about breakups here.
You know what, though? I actually one time on the radio interviewed a breakup coach. I think her name is Natalia Juarez, I think is her name, and she helps people with breakups, and she actually seems like she does incredible work. This is a whole field. Anyway, my point was, next week is going to be breakups part two. We got a lot of questions about particulars of breakups and people's unique situations, and so I'm interested to dive into those, but there's just not time this week. Thank you. I have been Kate Sloan. You can find my sex blog at girlyjuice.net and the rest of my writing at katewritesaboutsex.com. I actually wrote a piece on girlyjuice.net recently that I really enjoyed, which was about a study from 1954 in which a man who had both a safety pin fetish and epilepsy had part of his brain removed to treat the epilepsy, and it made his fetish go away. So I just wrote a
that
post
was
about,
so fascinating.
It was such a wild study, just like from top to bottom. So I wrote kind of like a close reading of the study, which you can check out at girlyjuice.net. The post is called "The Case of the Disappearing Safety Pin Fetish." You can also check out my other podcast, which is called Question Box. This week's new episode is really fun. It's me and my partner, Matt, facing off to answer various personal questions. And there was a contentious debate about my ice cream eating habits, if that helps sway you to listen to it at all. And you can also follow me on Twitter and Instagram at girly_juice. Where is your stuff?
I'm Bex. You can find all my writing at BexTalkSex.com, and I'm on Twitter and Instagram at BexTalkSex. Together, we're the Dildorks. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at The Dildorks or at TheDildorks.com. You can also find us by searching The Dildorks in your favorite podcast app. While you're there, rate and review us. Brings us up in the charts and makes us easier for other folks to find. If you want to continue to support us, you can also go to Patreon.com/TheDildorks, toss a couple of bucks away, and help us keep doing what we're doing.
Thank you so much to Protodome. He did our theme song. It's called I Want You in My Bedroom, and his music is at protodome.bandcamp.com. Thank you to Amy. She did our logo. She is at starboots_ on Twitter. And thank you to you for listening. Until next time, folks, get out there and live your sexy, dorky life.
Bye.
Okay, I briefly want to tell you about Insidious.
Yes.
So I've been, me and Brenton have been invited onto this show called the Everyday Horror Podcast.
Cool.
Which is a show, I think it's for October, where this person watches a different horror movie every day and like discusses it with a different guest on the show every day.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it seems like it's going to be pretty cool. So Insidious is the one that we got, and I watched it the other night, and I just was like very reminded that I don't like horror movies.
That is the only horror movie I have ever walked out of the theater for.
What? I thought you liked it.
Oh, I love it. But so I made the mistake of, I got into a fight with a partner, the person I was seeing at the time.
Oh, shit.
And we like kind of resolved. We're still kind of pissy with each other. And we're like, you know what? Let's go see a movie together. You know, we'll just chill out, whatever. We'll mm-hmm. like relax. And then like,
yeah, it's a very relaxing movie for
sure. We address this. Yeah. The fucking violins. I have never been in a movie theater so loud. And the violin in that music is so shrill.
Yeah.
That, and it like, and he had a thing about creepy kids. So we got up to that scene with the tiptoe through the tulips.
There's a lot of creepy kids in that movie. Yeah,
yeah, there are. Mm-hmm. And we got up to the like where the record player is playing Tiptoe Through the Tulips and the little ghost kid is skipping through the house. And he was like, you know, we can just not keep watching this. And I was like, oh my God, we can. And we just left. And then when it came out on DVD, we watched it later and we loved it. And like, until we broke up, I think he still liked that movie. But yeah, we were just like, you know what? We can just stop having this experience. We can just leave.
That's a really good lesson to take into the rest of your life, honestly.
That was, I was like much younger then and was not, that was not a part of my life that I was like super used to having. So like, it was a realization. Now I'd be like, fuck this.
Yeah. Well, I didn't like it because I don't like jump scares. This is my thing. I like horror movies that don't have a lot of jump scares.
Yeah,
but,
same.
But these days, they are very few and far between. So I don't know what I'm going to say on this podcast, but it's going to be weird.
Yeah. I like horror. I've been talking to a lot of people about horror lately, but I like it for its ability to give the viewer an experience. In the same way I craft a scene when I'm topping someone, I want to be able to bring them through a series of feelings, and I like the way horror can artfully bring you through a series of feelings, and can address big, scary feelings like grief and trauma.
Yeah.
And I love horror that does that. But just like jump scares and like I think the storytelling in Insidious is really interesting, and I think it's viewed best as a pair with Insidious 2, because Insidious 2 overlaps half of Insidious 1 from a different point of view, so it really expands on the story you just saw. You don't care enough to watch it, and I totally get that, but
I mean, I want to suck Patrick Wilson's dick, but that's about as far as I go in terms of caring about this movie franchise. Yes, you are correct.
Yeah, that's reasonable.